but it's also much more. It's the heart of the art form that we all adore. Your friendly neighborhood comic book store. Out among the stacks of new releases, browsing with your future new best friends, you're gonna find the book you love to pieces. The girl behind the counter recommends dollar books and shelves of graphic novels. With action figures, board games, toys, and models to add to your new Comic Wednesday haul. The comic book store, the comic book store. Cause that's where the books live, but it's also much more. It's the heart of the art form that we all adore. Your friendly neighborhood comic book store.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Source Material Live. I'm your host, the Mandated Reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Radledge. And tonight, we're talking about Da Boys. Yes, sir, Da Boys, brought to you by Garth Ennis and Derek Robertson. Last year, Jesse and Gavin, around the time that we discussed season one of Da Boys from Amazon Prime, they also discussed the first trade. Well, I'm tagging in and picking up the reins, and we're going to talk about the second trade from the very lengthy Boys series. This one's entitled Get Some. It includes issues 7 through 14, which is two stories. One is Get Some, and the other one is it's the glorious five-year plan, which is hilarious to me. Joining me to talk about them boys, the boys, ladies and gentlemen from the Cosmic Treadmill and X-Lapsed and all kinds of ill shit, ladies and gentlemen, it's Chris Sheehan. How do you do, sir?
I'm going by the name Stick in the Mud today, because the book we're going to be discussing is I know a lot of people like it, and that's cool, but I did not, and I guess that's also cool, but we will talk about it as we work our way through.
Were you a fan of the Boys comic at all when it first came out? I'm guessing you were aware of it because you seem very aware of all the things going on in comics.
I tell you, this was back in 2006, 2007 or so, and I was actually one of Dynamite Comics' first quote-unquote professional reviewers, where every week I would get a box full of Dynamite comics that were going to come out like in 2 weeks. This is before, you know, everything was digital. So I was getting these books physically before they came out, and I was supposed to write about them. And even then, The Boys was a little much for me. The Boys is a mature is probably not a word we'd use. it really is a piss take on superheroes. And I get that there's an audience for that and there's an appetite for that. But maybe in current year, it's like, maybe we've seen that a little bit. Maybe that's not new and novel, and maybe it's not quite as clever as maybe it was 20 years ago. But even back then, in 2006, 2007, when I was getting these things mailed to my house, it was just like, oh, God, this again? Because it's just like, hey, you guys like superheroes? Well, you're fucking idiots for liking superheroes. Let me shit all over them, and you're going to pay me for it. Not my favorite.
Yeah, the television show kind of reads the same way. It's like, oh, you spent the last 10, 20 years or so, I guess it's been 10 years, you spent the last 10 years fawning over Marvel movies and giving them billions and billions of dollars? Well, you're all retards.
Yep.
And here's why. it's fine. I don't get offended by that. I will say this. We did, when the Netflix Punisher series came out, the book that we did alongside of it was Garth Ennis's Welcome Back, Frank.
Mm-hmm. Did he face off with the mob in that one?
Oh, you.
Were all the covers like The Punisher Leaning Against the Wall by Tim Bradstreet? Was that it? All of them? Every single last one?
Yeah. So you're familiar.
I think I've read one of those. Yeah.
we got a kick out of Garth Ennis at the time. I thought his style of writing suited the Punisher. I'll make fun of just about anything, and there were definitely some bits in the book that Jesse and I had a good laugh at.
We did one, the three of us, we did a Arthenis. Which one was that? It was a war book.
Oh, The Platoon.
Oh boy, I wish I could remember the name of it, because that one. That was quite good. That was quite good. He was a good fit for that.
Yeah. And it's funny, like, oh, did Punisher fight them up? Yes, that was the whole Welcome Back Frank arc.
That's every Punisher arc besides Platoon.
So, like, I can see, and I never read Preacher, but from what I understand, Preacher, a lot of Preacher is a lot of what you get out of him writing the Punisher, and, you know, and so I read the first trade of The Boys to get myself caught up. I didn't want to come into the second trade cold. And I was like, okay, I'd already seen season one of the show to talk mm-hmm. about it without having read the book.
Was it a good one-to-one, like, was it a reenacting of the first couple of arcs of the book?
There's a lot of the first trade in the first season.
Like, okay.
Right down to, I mean, they switch out some of the characters here and there. So as an example, Homelander in the comic is the one that tries to get Starlight to give him a blowjob, which she does. In the show, spoilers, it's the Deep. So there's that. It begins with whatever the speedster's name is, whose name is now escaping me, the speedster killing the girlfriend, that's a one-to-one thing. Huey's an American character in the show, not British.
Okay.
In any case, the point that I was getting to was, I can see Garth Ennis has a very cynical take on comics. It's one that I think, and we'll talk about this with the second trade here, and you and I have varying opinions on it, but like, once you got out of the first trade and you got the message very loud and very clear and very vividly, superheroes are dumb, let's take the piss out of them. Like, I feel like in this trade, there's some of that, but not as much. Like, it's in big, blaring, glaring letters in the first trade, the first six issues. This one, I feel like he actually is wanting to tell stories.
I think the first of the two stories we get here is very much the tearing down kind of the circle jerking of what fandom talks about. It's like, hey, you know, wouldn't it be funny if actually this hero was actually something else?
You know,
and we get a lot of that.
I don't disagree with you. It is absolutely a send-up of Batman. It's mm-hmm. a tearing down of Batman. I think where I bought into it was in its execution. It's executed like a noir detective story. There's a murder that takes place. They have, you know, you have two cop-like characters going around questioning people, trying to develop evidence, doing interviews, and, you know, trying to figure out who murdered this poor kid who threw him off a roof. And while it's silly and over the top at times, that's the real meat of it. That's the gist of it, is, you know, it's kind of Law and Order with superheroes. And then there's the element of some of these characters are homosexual, and, you know, and again, you can talk about Garth Ennis' cynicism here. You have a character who's being gay for the camera, but isn't really like that, and stuff like that. And so I thought there was a lot going on here, but we're swerving all over the road here. So let me at least talk about what this first set of stories is about, and then we can tear it apart. Mm-hmm. So as I said, this first story, Get Some, which is issue 7 through 10, talks about a boy who was seemingly murdered that nobody cares about. It's one of those nameless, faceless, who gives a shit murders. He's, you know, some street urchin who the cops just, you know, kind of looked at it, blinked twice, and moved on to something else. And at the beginning of the story, they talk about how the comic books are all marketing and in a front for the superheroes. You know, and they sort of treat comic books like they're the National Enquirer. You know, this is all BS, that the story behind a lot of these superheroes is they're all, like, craven, terrible human beings. But that the comic books try to polish it up for the public. And there's a guy in the comic book store that they go to for information, who goes by the name of the Legend, and he's the one that says, hey, here's this file on this kid, look into it for me. So Huey and Butcher are on the case, and they go about taking on some leads, and they start questioning some people, and as it turns out, it involves Tech Knight, who is the Batman send-up. It's sort of a combination of Batman and Iron Man, who is going through his own psychological sort of unraveling. He has there's a whole like bit in this book about how Tech Knight it has this compulsion to have
he wants to fuck everything.
Yep, he wants to fuck everything. Yeah. And it starts with him wanting
animal, vegetable, or mineral.
He wants to fuck the android in front of him. He wants to fuck a watermelon. He sticks his dick in the butler's ear, etc., etc. And the this revolves around his old the Robin to his Batman. What was it? Swingwing was his name.
Swingwing was when he was grown up, and then but he was like Laddio.
Laddio.
When he was younger, like Robin, he was Laddio, but as Nightwing, he was Slingwing or whatever.
Right. So he's the one that's gay for the camera. He's the hero that is the protector of the homosexual community, and as we find out, and here's where I need you to jump in, because I wasn't quite sure of what they were saying was he wasn't actually gay, but he took on this persona because it was good for his image, or he starts, when they confront him about it, he starts talking about how the image was, you know, was just that, it was just an image, but it wasn't really him. And then I couldn't figure out, well, then is he not gay, or is it just that that's just, you know, not him? Like, what did you get from that?
I got that he was probably very questioning, or maybe polyamorous. Just, okay. You know, he was, he, you know, men, women, didn't matter. But I think he was embarrassed.
Okay.
I think he was, yeah, when it was pointed out to him. And there was a lot of self-loathing in here, too, talking about the cynicism. The reactions to the allegations are very, very severe and very violent in a lot of cases here, especially, you know, in the main one in this story arc.
I don't want to do too much of this because we're going to do it tomorrow on TV Party, but there's actually a bit in season two where the Wonder Woman analog is outed as being gay, and as it turns out, she's not gay, she's bi, but the executive in charge of the superheroes through Vought American says, no, bi is too much for the American public. We're good with gay. Gay sells a story. Gay is positive. If you're bi, it'll just confuse people. So no men for you. And the Wonder Woman analog is like, what the fuck? Like, you know, the need to put people in a box and give them very clear labels, is high, and so the comic book and the show both deal with that in their own way. And so in any case, what it comes down to is, I guess, as Swingwing, him and this female supervillain and Tech Knight end up having a threesome, and I'm trying to figure out where I know it was the kid who ends up dying tried to tell Swingwing that he was in love with him, and yep. Swingwing freaked out and pushed him off the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to figure out how that connects to Tech Knight.
Because Tech Knight, well, we skipped the part where we went to that bar, and
right.
We met the gay bar, and we met the bartender and his boyfriend,
right,
who had some sort of details on Swingwing, whatever the hell his name is. Yes.
Yeah.
Which got us to, because I'm trying to remember that myself now. I had it all in my head and I lost it.
Well, I know Swingwing had it in for one of them. Tech Knight or Swingwing had it in for the other one because of the threesome thing.
Well, they had a falling out. Yes, because we had our two heroes here saying, you know, we question this guy. We haven't questioned Tech Knight. And they're like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe we should question Tech Knight. And that's when they walk into his house and basically call him out for being Tech Knight. Though Tech Knight very, very cleverly hides his suit of armor under his rug, which yes. they have to walk over. So there's that. At this point, I was actually feeling like empathy for Tech Knight because the Butcher is just such an asshole. he is every character that Garth Ennis or Warren Ellis has ever created, wrapped up into one punchable, smirking Irish face. And it's just like, oh, this motherfucker, I hate this guy. But even though, you know, he was right and all, but I hated him. I hated every time he was right because you knew it was just going to lead to another page of him smirking like an asshole. But they beat him up. They beat up Tech Knight because he won't talk. And then that's when they talk about the threesome, and that's when he mentions that there was a falling out. And
I know Swingwing outed Tech Knight.
He outs Tech Knight, yeah.
As being revenge. A pervert.
Yeah.
And that's what, and so, because I think Tech Knight's on the verge of being part of the Seven.
The JLA analog.
Right. And that gets scuttled because Swingwing, out of anger or whatever, revenge on Tech Knight, outs him as being a sexual deviant.
Yeah.
And I guess how they got from that to Swingwing's the one, you know, that was responsible for the kid's death is
eluding me. It came kind of out of nowhere because there's a lot of sitting around and like reconnoitering in this book with Huey and the Butcher. They're just like, hey, let's sit down and talk.
Right. And Huey, like a good cop, keeps going back to the bar.
Yeah.
I know that they figure out that Swingwing was the one that did it because the gay couple in the bar are the mm-hmm. ones that tell Huey that because the bartender and the kid were cozying up to one another, the jealous boyfriend sent
Max.
The kid, yeah, sent the kid to Swingwing.
To Swingwing. Mm-hmm.
And saying, you know, just tell him how you feel. And so the kid does. The kid, unveils his heart to Swingwing, and Swingwing freaks out. And I don't think he meant to push him off the roof. I think it was an accident.
Yeah, but it was just a violent reaction.
But a lot of what Garth Ennis says in The Boys in general is that superheroes have all of this power. You know, it's did you ever see Man of Steel?
No.
So the big complaint about Man of Steel is that it's superhero destruction porn. That basically Superman and Zod have this big fight in the middle of Metropolis and destroy like several buildings and do like tens of billions of dollars worth of damage. Mm-hmm. And Superman saves nobody. Now,
so it's a Silver Age comic book story.
It's funny you say that. But that was the big complaint about Man of Steel, was that, you know, there's so much focus on the destruction and power that heroes and villains both cause, and there's no focus on actually saving people, which is what heroes are supposed to do. And Garth Ennis is making an editorial comment in this book about the callousness of super, which is a weird thing because superheroes aren't real. But you know this, like it's a weird thing to sort of like, you know, I don't like it, you know I'm going to criticize this thing about comic books. I'm like, yeah, but they're not real people.
We don't really have this problem, buddy.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I suppose you could say this about, and I don't want to get too much on a tangent here, but you know, if you're talking about like, you know, the cops and their relationship to the African American community and the destruction that it causes, sure. But certainly not destroying buildings wholesale and killing millions of people in one shot.
Kicking up mountains and throwing them at one another, yeah.
Yeah. You know, let's talk scale here. you know, mm-hmm. But moving on. So Garth Ennis is talking about the callousness of superheroes and how, like, and this comes out in the show as well, that Swingwing pushed this kid off a building, probably did it by accident in a moment of emotion, and then just left him there to die. Like, didn't know nothing about it, just walked away. Because superheroes don't care. Like, they're so powerful, and they're so disconnected from the average everyday human experience that they hurt people and they just walk away like it's nothing.
Hashtag not all heroes. I mean, the thing about the destruction porn. Those can be fun stories. These are supposed to be fun, mindless stories. It wasn't until we started overthinking these things that we made them unfun. That we are the monsters that created The Boys. Because we overanalyze things, and it's like, well, wait a minute. If he did that, then why didn't he do this? And wait, if Superman can hear everyone, doesn't he know that people are dying all around? Don't think about that shit, because that makes it unfun. This is supposed to be something to escape with, not to be in the fetal position under your beds crying. Of course, if superheroes were real, they would be insane. They would be the worst things in the world. I don't know that we need a book about it, because it's just like, this feels like we're preaching to a choir of people who ran out of Vertigo books to read, who would be standing at the new comics wall judging me when I bought an X-Men comic.
Let me say this. I'm okay with the exploration of alternative ideas in the sense of, well, what if we took the concept of what if superheroes were real and not all of them grew up virtuously the way Clark Kent is presented, or have a code of honor that stops them from committing murder the way Batman is presented.
Didn't we call that Watchmen?
Well, that's the thing. I'm okay if we explore these things, but let's not get crazy.
This whole book hinges on that. That's the only thing this book hinges on. That and explosive diarrhea and masturbation and blowjobs and vibrators and...
There is a criticism out there about how, we adults, we middle-aged men who want to read comic books, but we don't want to read kiddie books. We want to read stuff for adults.
Oh, we're the worst.
And there's a contingent of artists and... writers out there absolutely willing to sell us those drugs.
Oh yeah.
Like, if you want to read comic books, but you want to read adult comic books, well, here you go. Here's fucking and sucking and shitting and and moral ideals turned on their heads. Here it is. It's all for you. Enjoy, you middle-aged fat fucks.
It'll make you feel like you're returning home from your first year of college.
God forbid you people pick up a book with no pictures in it. Here you go, assholes.
Do they make those?
Yes. I have one or two on my shelf.
Wow. You'll have to take pictures of that.
Yeah, they're archaic.
I don't know if I've ever seen one of those.
I once got one of those books from what they call a library.
The library.
Yes.
Delicious.
So... I hear where you're coming from. It does sound like you like your comic books in in the traditional sense of this is supposed to is a way for me to escape. This is a fantasy.
Well, I'm also a certified fake ass comics historian who's read a lot of this, and I've seen it done better, and I've seen it done with more earnestness, and I've seen it done in a time where it was novel, where this is just like this is the mid-2000s here. It's like, this shit's passé. This shit is just like, okay, we get it. This is when Howard Stern went to Satellite. Okay, you're saying fuck all the time because you're allowed to say fuck all the time. Right. You're not creative. You're being an asshole. That's it.
So here's what I liked about it, though. I'm a big fan of, and I got turned on to this by Andrew Graham, a friend of the Rattlesnake Broadcasting family. We do the Crown series and Cobra Kai and this and that. He comes on every once in a while. He turned me on to Gotham Central, which was an Ed Brubaker book.
Brubaker and Rucka, yeah.
Yeah. And I like that sort of thing. I like the Law and Order type shows. Yeah. I like the Law and Order type shows. I like, cop noir mystery type books and shows and movies and whatnot. And so the element of Get Some that I latched onto was that aspect of it. Was Huey and Butcher, who are basically taking on the role of cops, investigating a murder.
Sure.
That much of it I liked. Tech Knight wanting to fuck Fruit and anything that gets in his way, and the butler quit because he fucked him in the ear.
I mean, there is an audience for that. I don't want to make it sound like I'm above any of that stuff. I'll laugh at some stupid shit. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll make bad jokes. I'll make things that aren't even jokes, and I'll laugh at it.
Right.
But I mean, it's just like, this isn't for me. And that's nothing against anybody who does dig this, and more power to you. There's shit I like that I'm sure people don't. So it's, you know, just a thing.
I think my take on that stuff was, the whole book is over the top. This is just more of that. And
sure.
You know, and so for me, it was kind of an eye roll. It was like, yeah, okay, he, you know, like,
and plus,
doctor, I can't stop fucking. All right, page two.
And part of me is too lost in the weeds and too lost in the scenery to where I know that there's a lot of folks out there, a lot of like legitimate fake ass comics historians, not even the you know, certified ones like myself, who think that a lot of the stuff that happened between the Golden and Silver Age had to do with the concept of Batman as a sexual deviant. And this story feeds into that. It misinforms people because that wasn't the case, but it feeds into an argument that exists because of laziness and because of painting with the broadest brush you can grab. And I mean, that has nothing to do with the book. That's not a fault of the book. It's not a fault of anybody who likes the book. It's a Chris problem because I get lost in the weeds and I'm just annoyed of hearing misinformation spread, and this feels like it feeds into it.
You know what the hilarious thing about what you're saying is that because the show is new and people there's a lot of people out there who don't follow comic books and they watch TV.
And this is their introduction to things.
But they also watch television passively. So, like, I came home today, and the big news of today, kind of dating the podcast, was the Morbius movie is being delayed.
Canceled? Yes!
Delayed.
That's fine.
For a second or third time, till later this year. And, you know, and I'm kind of going through all these details, and I was talking about another movie that is no longer... It's getting pulled from its theatrical release, and it's going straight to VOD. And so the conversation I was having with my wife was like, oh, and so we don't know if Cinderella's coming out because there's been no marketing on it. And a lot of the stuff I was just pulling from the Variety article. And my wife goes, right, because most people don't follow the entertainment news the way you do. Like, you are in the weeds of the most minute detail of what's going on in movies and television. 90% of the people who watch television are not that way. They're not me.
Certainly not. Certainly not. That's why they don't read.
So a show like The Boys comes on Amazon Prime and it gets lauded by TV critics for being a really great television show, and so people watch it. They have Amazon Prime, they watch The Boys is the hit new TV show that all the kids are into. No fucking clue that it's a comic book, and don't care. So the point of me bringing that up is that people watching The Boys now, in the midst of, like, the golden age of superhero movies, right? We just had this long slew of Marvel movies that, you know, that ended with Endgame, and it was like a celebration of comic book movies, wasn't it? You know, and you've got all these DC movies coming out that are hit and miss by, you know, largely. But we've never had as many comic book, like, big-budget comic book movies as we've got right now. And we've certainly never had as many comic book television shows as we've got right now. And so along comes The Boys, and The Boys, as we've been discussing, is this editorial on the whole concept of superheroes, and people are like, wow, isn't that novel? Isn't this cool? Isn't Homelander funny?
You get a whole new generation of people being, wow, superheroes are dumb.
Yeah. Like, ooh-hoo, isn't this avant-garde that, you know, that this Amazon Prime show that came out of nowhere is really sticking it to superheroes? Ha-ha, Superman and Batman are dumb. And it's like, yeah, it's a 20-year-old comic book.
Yeah. Go back to reading your Sandman.
All right, let's move on to the second story.
One more thing.
Yes, sir.
We don't have to read Morbius anytime soon.
No, that got delayed till October.
Oh, hell yeah. Just as long as it doesn't interfere with Dexter, we're good.
It doesn't, I promise you. You'll have your Dexter podcast and then some.
Okay.
I would not do that to you, Chris. I love you.
Right back at you.
The glorious
I read The Boys for you.
Yeah, you did. You did. And you're doing a hell of a job, my man. All right. The glorious five-year plan. The boys go to Russia. I did not like this story as much.
You didn't like the big-dicked Russian?
Well, that was hilarious. He's my new favorite superhero. Love sausage. But... I'm sorry, I'm thinking about something else that had to do with dick humor. Somebody about run. Oh, it was in the comic book, as a matter of fact, where Love Sausage couldn't get through the crowd because he had a giant erection.
A giant erection. Yes, I cannot run, for my giant erection is in the way.
All right, so the villain of this story arc, and it's issues 11 through 14, is the Glorious Five-Year Plan, which is the name of a Russian superhero team. So, the villain is this diminutive little woman named Nina, and it starts off, she's masturbating on a plane. This will be important later.
Mm-hmm. And so put a pin in that.
Yeah. So the boys fly to Russia, and I guess they're there to do yet another investigation, try to figure out what's going on with this Nina person. I believe this Nina person was had gathered up this entire warehouse full of superheroes, mm-hmm. who were all bugged to blow up.
Yeah, they had like Suicide Squad things in their head. Yeah,
yeah. And I guess the story here, the details eluded me. What in the hell? Like I read the books. I can tell you kind of what happened, but I don't really understand what her plot was.
Her plot was weird because it's like we were led to believe she was the big bad, but then like we were led to believe she was just a patsy, and then she was the big bad again, but then she wasn't. It was very bizarre.
And I guess, well, my understanding, because they kept going back to how Love Sausage was a big fan of communism. This is Garth Ennis talking through Love Sausage, basically saying capitalism is terrible and... You know, and
now buy my book.
Yeah, right. Really,
buy my book, please. Many copies, and I'm going to sell it to Amazon. Please.
If we'd only take better care of people, the world would be a better place. And the voice of that is Love Sausage, who's saying, you know, ever since the Soviet Union fell, everything has been broken. Nobody takes care of each other. The world is a terrible place. I wish communism would come back. And then there's this politician on television who was a communist. He was like, he seems like a good fella. I wish he was in charge. And then it just mm-hmm. turns out he's a part of Nina's plot.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's all gunk, and it's, you know, and it's kind of, it's like there's Nina's mob, there's another Russian mob, there's a lot of shooting back
there's
and forth.
Americans in there, yeah.
Yeah, it's there's a vaunt American executive who's meeting with Nina at one point. And to this, and as I stand before you right now as we're talking, I still don't know what she was trying to do with the superheroes.
I don't either. Okay. I don't either. But I do know that I enjoyed this one more than the first one. I just thought it was a good opportunity to actually get to know some of these characters. And because I didn't read the first volume. I'm sure I read it back in 2006, but that's a long time ago. It was nice to actually get to sit down with these characters at Love Sausage's place, you know, and just see them react to one another. I'm assuming that was he new to this volume, or was he in the first one too?
No, he's in the first. The first one's about his recruitment.
Okay, cool.
You'll recall, whatever the Speedster's name is, runs through his girlfriend and kills
French
her.
Guy?
No.
Yeah, okay. Oh, in the first volume. Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. In the first volume, the Flash analog kills the girlfriend by running through her at top speed. And, you know, now he's
That's
broken.
That's what Flashes do.
Yes.
Aren't they awful?
So he's brokenhearted that his girlfriend's been murdered. And that's when Butcher finds him and says, "Don't you want to take revenge on superheroes for callously killing your girlfriend?" And that's pretty much the whole first volume. Is mm-hmm. integrating him into this group, introducing the characters, getting him souped up with Compound V so he can kill superheroes, etc.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why I like the second story. That's why I liked Get Some, because it's like it strips a lot of that away, and it's just a detective story. And and Huey isn't crying the entire time and screaming at Butcher for one reason or another.
Gotcha. Yeah, because I, when I read the first part here, I thought maybe that's when he was recruited. So I stand corrected, or sit corrected, but thought the second story, I don't know, it felt less mean than Get Some. Get Some, I'm projecting here, but I felt like it was like a personal attack almost. It was just like, how dare you like this shit to me? And it's like, well, leave me alone. I ain't hurt nobody, you know? What did I do?
Let me have my funny books. I'm not bothering you.
Right? I ain't burning your Sandman books. I ain't burning your Preacher books. Leave me alone. But this one just felt like a story that was just something that was being told. And I really liked Love Sausage. So Love Sausage was his name, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought he was a really funny character. I was sad that they left him at the end. I'm like, oh, maybe he'll go back with them. But no, he did not. I liked how he bonded with Huey. I like how they drank the rot gut. What was it? What did it turn out to be? It wasn't actually alcohol. Was it like...
That was like turpentine or something like that.
Yeah, it was like motor oil or paint thinner or some shit. And they were drinking that, and that's what saved them from being poisoned. The poor little Nina gets her ovaries exploded by a vibrator.
Yep, they put a bomb in the vibrator.
Because, of course, they had to. I probably could have done without the more gratuitous aspects of it. I didn't need to see Love Sausage's sausage, you know, strapped to his leg. A bit much, a bit... I mean, this is the kind of shit that, like, if I was in eighth grade and I got my hands on this, I'd be like, oh, my God. Oh, this is awesome. This is so funny.
There is a now juvenile aspect to this series.
Oh, totally, totally. Which and is there's so not funny anything wrong with that.
Which is so funny to me because it's like, what was your intended audience here? Was it middle-aged men? Because I don't know.
I think it's bleeding cool readers. I think that's who this is aimed towards. People who would buy Rich Johnston's, was it Mark Miller had his Clint magazine where the logo looked like the word cunt. So it's people who would buy that. Like I think I said this off the air. This is like Wizard Magazine After Dark. You know, some of the most juvenile stuff, but like tweaked to, you know, rated R and above.
Well, it's so funny because it's like, you know, in sales you want to maximize, you know, the amount of people you can sell to. And it's also why we get a lot of like bland this and that, because you're trying to appeal to as many people as possible.
Hospital food. Yeah.
Yeah. This is almost the exact opposite. It's like, okay, our audience is adult men, but not all adult men, because not all adult men enjoy fart and dick jokes. So you're talking about a cross-section of a cross-section of a cross-section of men who are going to want to read this. And it's like, well, that's not a recipe to sell a lot of books.
And part of me wonders if they amped up the juvenile and the mean-spiritedness of this book when DC tanked it. Because this was originally a DC book or a Vertigo book. When Paul Levitz, who was running DC at the time, saw it, he's like, nope. We're not publishing this. So that's why it went over to Dynamite. And I wonder if some of the anger and some of the pointedness of this, not that the original issues weren't, I wonder if if this is a response to that, like a bigger middle finger than it was initially intended to be.
So the second story ends with from what I remember reading, they've got Vought American dead to rights, and and Butcher wants to. They're there on an ask by the CIA, and then they have all of this information to get Vought in trouble, and the CIA is like, no thanks,
don't do it. Yeah,
right. So Butcher gets a detonator, and he's able to blow up the warehouse full of superheroes.
Yeah. A lot of head popping.
Yeah, and that's kind of, and then that's it. Then they blow up Nina's plane with Nina on it. They blow up all the superheroes, and Vought American goes on being Vought American, and Butcher goes on being frustrated. But at least we have a lot of dead people.
That's it.
I didn't hate the story. There was, because like I said, Love Sausage is a great character, and like he's the best part of this story. The story itself, like I said, is a little on the confusing side, but you know, overall, it's kind of like watching an action movie where like you don't quite understand why people are shooting at each other, but you're entertained because people are shooting at each other.
True, very true.
And this is another one where Huey got a, you know, who is the main star of the
he's
book.
He's the point of view character, yeah.
But he got a lot in this one. Like, I didn't think he got as much. Like, he's very annoying in the first trade. Okay. He's very, you know, and that's true of the character in the series as well, where he's supposed to be the everyman character. He's supposed to have the moral compass. He's the conscience of the group, except that he's just fucking whiny. You know, at some point, either you're committed to this or you're not. You know, you can't be half pregnant about it. And in the first trade, just like I said, in at least a good part of the first series, the first season, he's like every other page, he's crying about something and he's like wanting to run away and walk off the group or whatever. Mm-hmm. This one, you know, both of these stories are very Hugh positive.
Sure.
He's a very strong character. He's very smart. He's got a lot going for him. He, you know, like I said, the first one, he's the one that really leads the investigation as to who murdered the kid. And this
one, he cuts through all the bullshit. Yeah.
Right. And this one, him and Love Sausage are basically the ones that saved the group after everyone got poisoned.
Mm-hmm.
The Frenchman gets to do a little bit. The girl gets to do a little bit. Butcher is the character who, you know, here's this person, here's that person, here's what's going on here. And then he gets poisoned and he doesn't do a whole hell of a lot. So the point that I'm getting to is Hugh is the one who gets a lot of really positive things happening in trade two. I liked his part in both stories.
Sure, I'm with you there.
Anything else? I'll give you the last word here. Anything else about the Glorious Five-Year Plan?
The art about halfway through it. I think we had a different artist on here, unless it was Derek Robinson half asleep.
Change, doesn't it?
Yeah, the art, it almost goes into like a Batman animated series, like a dollar store version of that. Not a good look. Not a good look at all. What's her face? Nina, like... She almost looked like Betty Boop. Like, it was very, very strange where she went from just being a very tiny girl to Betty Boop, a scary alien. But the art was a bit jarring in I want to say it was probably issues 13 and 14, where the art was a little weird. But other than that, I thought Love Sausage was great. I loved the scenes between him and Hugh. I liked when Hugh automatically assumed that Love Sausage poisoned them, and they started almost going at it. And he had to be talked down by Love Sausage, which was pretty funny. I think I like this one more just because it was, maybe it was a little bit more familiar in just like the soapiness of it to some of the stuff I read, rather than just being a commentary that was maybe a little too pleased with itself. It's like, hey, you know, Batman and Robin, they got something going on, right? I'm gonna write a story about it. No, please don't. We've seen it before, and we'll see it again. We don't need it now.
To your point, I don't know why Garth Ennis thinks he's the height of wit by making an accusation that Batman's fucking Robin.
Yeah, I mean that's he is the first person to make that observation, right?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, I've never seen that before. That's very, very clever stuff.
It's like he has recently passed away from COVID, but a doctor I used to work with, I used to come in and say, I mean, I would talk about wrestling or boxing or MMA or whatever, and he would go, "Oh,
that's
you
fake.
Like to no, oh, you the other way." You like to watch those men roll around, those half naked men roll around on the mat. Well, aren't you witty?
Never heard that one before.
You're the first person to make gay innuendo jokes about wrestling, you cheeky dog, you.
You should send a letter to someone.
I would like to subscribe to your newsletter, sir.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's The Boys, Volume 2. As the series goes on, so too will we look at these books. It was fine. Like I said, I had a fun read with this, but, you know, it is what it is. I don't know if the series gets better or worse from here on in, but like I said, we'll continue to examine these books at a future date. In the meantime, what do you got going on over on your channel?
Well, as this comes out, I'll be putting out the 100th episode of X-Lapsed, which is my look at the current year X-Men books. So it's going to be a very underwhelming issue of Wolverine we're discussing, because I unfortunately don't have enough foresight to have something more interesting to talk about on a milestone episode. I play the ball where it lies, and I'm sure I'll pay the price for that. So it kind of is what it is. But if you're listening to this and you happen to see like a tweet about that, please share it. I don't care if it's a pity share. I don't care if it's a pity like. I'll take all of your pity. So give it there. You can find me at Ace Comics on Twitter and chrisandreggie.podbean.com.
So we are talking about The Boys tonight because tomorrow, myself, Jesse Starcher, and Robert Winfrey will be reviewing Season 2 of the Amazon Prime show The Boys. We're going to take Wednesday off this week so that I can watch New Year's Smash, AEW. And then Thursday, we've got a double dose for you. First, myself and Chris Bailey will be reviewing both nights of AEW New Year's Smash. And then in the evening time, myself, Cole Marantet, and Sean Comer will be reviewing the second part of the Transformers War for Cybertron Netflix series, this one called Earthrise. And then Sunday night, myself and Pat Mullen will be doing our next chapter in the history of heavyweight boxing. We'll be looking at George Foreman. And then you're back again, my friend.
I am.
You and I are going to be talking about Star Wars Bounty Hunters Volume 1, Galaxy's Deadliest by Ethan Sachs.
Ah, Star Wars. Okay.
And we're talking about that because myself and half the people I podcast with are going to be talking about The Mandalorian Season 2. And myself and Chris Bailey will be reviewing Impact, Hard to Kill. Well, or as I like to call it, Impact. Hello, Kenny Omega.
See, it's funny to me. Like, Impact Wrestling is suddenly, like, they're that nerdy kid that the hot girl would let, like, do their homework for them.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, with AEW here. And all I can picture is Scott D'Amore's infantile face smiling like a Cheshire Cat. And it makes me want to throw bricks.
Wednesday night, we'll be doing an on-trial for the 2010 iteration of The Karate Kid. That's the one with Jackie Chan and Jaden Smith. And then, finally, I'll be reviewing with, again, half the people on the network, Cobra Kai Season 3. Last week, myself and Alexis Haina did three reviews. We did Red Sonja and Vampirella Meet Betty and Veronica. We reviewed The Wonderful World of Disney Part 1, Season 1. We reviewed His Dark Materials Series 2, and the boys and I, the real boys, the Podsmen, we looked at New Year's Evil and the Brody Lee Celebration of Life on TV Party. So that's all in the archives. That's a great show. We had a good we had a fun time talking about NXT, New Year's Evil, and the Brody Lee Celebration of Life. So give those a listen if you please. All right, so for Chris Sheehan, I'm Mark Rattledge. This has been Source Material Live. Be well, be safe, and behave.